Okay, so this is the oblate mural painted in 2001. It was painted by two artists, Rémy Geneste and Lucie Tettamonte. And basically, in the development of Western Canada, the role of the oblates is to be noted. For sure, we can have our reservations and objections to the existence of residential schools, and we're not going to deny the harm and the injustice of what took place here. Here, it's a focus, but what did they contribute? Because on the other hand, they also contributed to bringing in hospitals and schools and education as a whole and work to develop the country. So this mural is to highlight some of those events. We have here on the, facing it on your left side, Eugène de Maisonneuve, the founder of the Oblates. He came from France, and he formed the Oblates because at the time, the Catholic Church was quite mixed up with politics and was not focused on the poor. And people in prison and so forth were almost pre-damned, if I want to exaggerate a bit the statement. He didn't believe in that. He felt lots of the Christian messages focused on the poor. So his order was to go where the poor were, people in need, and there to share the gospel. So he, at the request of the bishop attaché in Winnipeg, he sent some oblates to the West. Then we see Bishop Grandin, who quite a remarkable man. He traveled the equivalent of 7 times around the circumference of the world on either dog sled or canoe. So much so that his back was completely shot. So the later part of his life, he was working, he'd be working standing up because he couldn't sit down. So his back was so bad. So that's why he named Bishop Father Emile Legal to be his helper, which later became Bishop Legal, and the font and the name from which our community is named after. You see, between Bishop Grandin and Eugène de Maisonneuve, you see a bridge. That's the first bridge built in Alberta. It was built in St. Albert, and it was built by Father Lacombe. So there's a few stories that Father Lacombe, to get that built, says whoever comes and helps to build the bridge, they can cross it afterwards free. Those who don't come and help, they have to pay a nickel to use the bridge. So there's a bunch of people came and the bridge was built. Now, if you look, this bridge also has a great deal of a tremendous optical effect. If you go from right to left on the building and you walk it from right to left, you will see that the bridge will always be following you. It's as if it's straight in line with you and you can just walk in right on there directly. So it's something as it's a beautiful exercise if you're doing the walking tour to take a look at that. Underneath that bridge, you see the canoe representing Bishop Grandin and his trips by canoe. And you see the old bishop's residence, which originally was done by the Grey Nuns and was done by used also for schooling in the beginning, but then transferred after. So that's the symbolism there. It's still existing there today. In the center of the mural, you see some people, a priest at a wedding and a gathering, and there's a wedding taking place. That's because in preparation for the mural, and oblates were sharing, is part of their approach was to take people where they're at, to live amongst the people, to be one of them, not to be above them, trying to boss them around or dictate to them, but to live amongst the people and lived what they lived. And the oblates wanted that to be the central theme of that. And I know over the years, I've heard many stories how some of the oblate fathers were as good or even better hunters and fishermen than some of the local people, because they really took that to heart. Underneath that central scene, you see a train. And right beside that, there's some First Nations people, and there's Father Lacombe and the Parliament buildings. So Father Lacombe is an interesting story. He would have had his grandmother would have been married on her first marriage to a native person. and she would have had children from him. And then at one point, for whatever reason, she left the reserve and remarried a white person from which Father Lacombe is a descendant. So Father Lacombe would have had distant cousins that would have been First Nations. And he spoke many First Nation languages and was beloved by all of them. So as a matter of fact, when he died, they buried his body in St. Albert, and his heart was placed and kept in Calgary, in Metaport. They call him the man with a good heart, very highly respected. So when the railroad came, they asked Father Lacombe to be the negotiator between the First Nations and the Parliament, because the Parliament was bringing that train across to BC to incorporate British Columbia into confederations. So there we see Father Lacombe in a prayerful stance, showing he's reflecting and seeing how there's a directive from the government, and he sees the need for that. But he also sees how that will impact the people of the First Nations, how it will be difficult for them. Life won't be the same. And of course, he was torn. He was torn by the two different things. So we see him in that prayerful stance for that reflection, to reflect, what do I do with this? In the end, the railroad went across all Western Canada, and there was no bloodshed. And a big part of that was due to Father Lacombe. Now we know St. Albert is named after him, and so is the town of Lacombe. To the right of the Father Lacombe and this scene here, we see a team of dog sleds. Now again, these dog sleds, if you go from right to left across the dog sleds, you will see that the dogs will follow you. No matter which way you are, you're always straight in line with the team of dogs. And that's to show that lots of dogs, lots of what they did was done by dogs. Myself as coordinator, I spent some time with the First Nations, and I heard firsthand stories of people from the First Nations who had the priest come in and bring them food in the winter using dog sled. So it's a firsthand story that I heard, and I incorporated that into the painting to show that amidst maybe some things that were negative, there was a care there for the people. And to the last part, right of that, you see Brother Antoine Kowajik, who's a Polish brother, who lost his arm in a saw in Lac La Biche, the Lac La Biche mission. But the rest of his time he spent at the Collège Saint-Jean, what is presently Faculté Saint-Jean, and working with the college there, which was a French residential school. At the time, in Alberta, French was not allowed to be taught. It was against the law to teach French. So people who wanted to maintain their language had to go to the residential schools to have that French education and will to maintain their language. And many of the leaders of the Francophone community today come out of that, of coming out of the what is Faculté Saint-Jean now, but originally the Collège Saint-Jean. So in the bottom of that, you see again a school, which was kind of a residential school. Brother Antoine, I heard even giving tours, heard many stories of different miracles that occurred where he interceded for them. And then God somehow answered those requests, and people's the prayers were answered through him. So it's a very holy man, very simple man, but of a great presence.